flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest, over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Donnie Football with you on Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan until 10:35 tonight. We will have Nick Faribault join us in about a half hour, a little bit under that. We will have a college football minute in a bit, but every time I work with the man behind the glass tonight, Joel Nelson, I like to give him an opportunity to cook a little bit. This is Joel's pick. He gets to pick the topic for this segment. So, Joel, what's on your mind tonight?
Well, Donnie, it's too bad that the Pro Bowl and the Pro Bowl games are never what they used to be, of course. I do like the idea, though, of, you know, it's fascinating how for the Pro Bowl games, AFC against the NFC, TJ Watt and Myles Garrett are teammates during all of this. And so are, you know, if let's say Marshawn Lattimore was in the champion, let's say Washington and Philly both did not make the NFC mm-hmm. championship game, then you get Marshawn Lattimore and AJ Brown potentially as teammates.
Oh, there's some fireworks
for
there.
This. Or hey, even like Mike Evans and Marshawn Lattimore. So the Pro Bowl games, they're cool, but I'm fascinated by how players from different teams, rival teams, do become teammates for a day or two or so.
I think you're giving it too much credit just because you're, in general, a very nice and positive guy.
You might just be.
It was cool when we were kids. It felt a lot cooler to me, and I maybe that's just because we were kids, but I also thought the quality of the actual game, it actually felt real. It felt like more of a real game. You had Sean Taylor, you know, headhunting that punter when they ran the fake back in like 2004. You had like cooler moments. I was a big fan of seeing guys wear their own helmet. You know, kind of like in baseball when they wear their own uniform in the All-Star game, that sort of deal. But it was something that has gone downhill in years since. You know, guys are worried about getting injured. You know, that, you know, reasonable concern there. But you just get so many random dudes that end up being in the Pro Bowl at this point. Like, it has not been an accolade for quite some time. Russell Wilson being a Pro Bowler, Patrick Queen being a Pro Bowler this year. I mean, come on.
Snoop Huntley a couple years ago for the Ravens, the longtime backup quarterback.
Yeah, he was a Pro Bowler that year that he played, what, like half the season when Lamar Jackson got hurt? And I don't know. I mean, they just play silly games now. You know, dodgeball, it's basically a bunch of NFL players playing gym class is what it is. They're playing dodgeball. There's a relay race. There's a big spike challenge that measures the power and impact that a big fella can spike the ball with. There's a tug of war. There's a satisfying catches thing with receivers and tight ends and corners. They got a relay race. They're playing a trivia game. Like, I'm more interested in the trivia game than half of the other stuff they do.
The one that's actually, like, not physical activity.
Yeah. Like, there's just so many things that we have now with the Pro Bowl. It just makes it such a tough watch. I said earlier tonight, if it was the only thing on TV, I still wouldn't watch it. Like, I might even start reading a book. Who knows? If it meant I had to watch the Pro Bowl games. I haven't watched the Pro Bowl in years. Years. It's funny, too. I used to have I still am a buddy of this guy. It's not like he's a former buddy, but one of our college buddies, he, like, loved the Pro Bowl for whatever reason. And it was always on the weekend of the Royal Rumble. And, you know, I was in a friend group with guys who were either wrestling fans going into college or they became wrestling fans when they got entrenched in the friend group, whatever it may be. And both events used to be on a Sunday. And this guy would insist, hey, let's watch the Pro Bowl before we watch anything for the Royal Rumble. And that just quickly got outvoted. We're like, yeah, no. Like, I'll watch old wrestling promos and old wrestling events before I put on the Pro Bowl. It's just like I don't know, it's brutal to me. Like, they're just kind of out there shooting the breeze, whatever. And, I mean, I get it. People still watch it because it's the NFL. People will buy the Pro Bowl jersey or shirzy, whatever they want to buy. They'll buy a Pro Bowl hat. But, man, I just have, like, a negative amount of interest in it.
Baseball has become, feels like, the only sport where it feels like an actual competition. An actual game at this point.
Yeah, baseball, I mean, with the NBA, it's basically just a...
They're all going down the court.
Yeah.
A bunch, like, of fast break.
Yeah, that one's just like you're watching the Globetrotters.
Same thing for the NHL at this point, too. A whole bunch of odd man breakaways.
Yeah, like I still enjoy watching the MLB All-Star Game. You get cooler moments in that, too. You know, not that you don't in other ones. You know, we've seen cool moments more so in the NHL and NBA than, you know, back in the day, the NFL had cool moments where, you know, Peyton Manning's throwing a touchdown pass to Jerry Rice, or Jeff Saturday is switching teams for one snap to snap the football to Peyton Manning one more time. Things like that. But in baseball, we got that Paul Skenes-Aaron Judge matchup. We got the Paul Skenes-Juan Soto matchup. We got to see Mason Miller, the Bethel Park product, throw the fastest pitch in All-Star Game history. We get stuff like that. I still think the Home Run Derby is fun to watch. I wish Chris Berman was on the call for it, personally.
Back, back, back.
Yeah, I mean, Chris Berman, you put him on the Home Run Derby, you put him on NFL primetime. And you can just kind of put him in a box for the rest of the year. But he is still phenomenal in those two events. The other thing I noticed, too, I was looking at this earlier, which is, it's related to the NFL. There is already 6 international games that will be on the slate for 2025. Now, there are heavy rumors that the Steelers will be hosting a game in Ireland. And we are thinking that will be 2025 because they have the extra home game. But we already have three games in London. One will be hosted by the Jags, the other hosted by the Jets, the other hosted by the Browns. The Colts will host a game in Berlin. The Dolphins will host a game in Madrid. And it looks like the Chargers will host the game in Brazil, which will be on that Friday night in week one. So assuming they add the Ireland game here soon, that's going to be seven international games.
It really gets you thinking if there might end up being a franchise overseas, which I think it's going to end up being too complicating, but it seems like year after year, you get the Jaguars in talks about potentially being in London overseas, and that they would be the team that the NFL could, I don't know, sacrifice sending overseas and have them play all their home games overseas. I don't think it's going to work out.
I think people have had a thought, I guess. There's like a theory out there that they could have like an England division where there's four teams over there. That would just be tough. That would be tough to do with the rest of the league, just given the travel and such. But see, now the other thing with this, if you are a Steeler fan that likes to go to a road game every year, or maybe you have that Ireland game on your in your sights, I think this is just an example here of how we are seeing more and more international games every season. The Steelers haven't played in one since 2013. That won't happen again. They will not go another 12 years. I think it'll be more like 2 to 4.
They're due.
Yeah, they will play this game in Ireland in 2025, most likely. That has not been confirmed yet, but it seems to be like a 99% of the way there. It's on the goal line, like some would say. Except I do think this will actually happen. But then I feel like we could see the Steelers playing another international game within 4 years of that. Maybe in like Mexico City. They have such a strong fan base in Mexico.
They are one of the premier teams, you know, for the basic football fan. They're right up there with the Cowboys and the Patriots and the Chiefs and the Eagles. Even though the Steelers, they don't have the playoff wins to show for, they're still one of those premier teams.
So like somebody
most talked about.
Yeah, so like somebody in my situation where, you know, 2025 a game in Ireland, that just won't be financially responsible. Because I'm going to have some pretty big things on my plate in the next handful of months. You know, likely the beginning stages of planning a wedding and the costs that come with that. Yeah, I can go to my usual Steelers road game in the States, but I don't think a trip to Ireland would really be financially wise unless I won some sort of like lottery there as a season ticket holder and, you know, the tickets were incredibly cheap. But that's, I'm saying that to also say, I won't have to wait as long as we've waited. Like, they could play in Mexico in a few years, for all we know, or somewhere else. Who knows? But yeah, I've just noticed we're going to be at a point where we have like 8 international games a year, pretty consistently. You know, it's not just the London games anymore where we get 2 or 3 or 4. They have added blocks to this thing where we're going to get probably around 8 per season the rest of the way.
We're going to start the NFL season. Next thing you know, we'll have all those international games, probably all at 9:30 Eastern time in the Americas. And then next thing you know, it's the end of the season. You would think that they're going to space all those games out throughout the middle part of the season.
Fan text line, that's brought to you by Edgar Snyder and Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. Coming up, a quick college football minute, and then Nick Faribault around 9:30. It's Donnie Football on 93.7 The Fan.
Ah. Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 45% off select styles and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 45% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for their members. This week, it's all about buy five and get five free when you buy 10 mix and match participating items. Here are just a few. Coca-Cola, 7-Up, Pepsi, or Smartwater beverages of various sizes. 16-count fresh baked cookies and pint-sized Ben & Jerry's ice cream, as well as 6 mega or 12 double rolls of Signature Select soft and strong bath tissue and 6 rolls of Brightly paper towels selected varieties. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. You got Donnie and Joel for the next hour plus. Joel Nelson is with me behind the glass. Nick Farabaugh from PennLive.com will join us in a few minutes, but right now it is time for a college football minute. Joelie, there it is. Joel, I thought this could be fun for us. The college football season just ended about a week and a half ago. The schedules are out for 2025. I am a Pitt fan. You are a Penn State fan. So here's what we're going to do here. Let's switch sides and play the win-loss game. Joel, you will run me through the Penn State schedule one by one. I will determine if that game is a win or a loss. I will then run you through the Pitt schedule. You will then tell me if a game is a win or a loss.
Let's roll.
Joel, I will go first with you for Pitt. The Panthers open August 30th. The city game, baby, at Acrisure Stadium against Duquesne.
This is going to be a fun one, but Pitt Panthers will end up with a victory when this one is all said and done. They'll start off 1-0.
Another one at home, September 6th against Central Michigan.
I would also say that will be a win against the Fighting Antonio Browns.
September 13th at West Virginia.
Feels like it's, you know, whoever is the home team is going to win this game, West Virginia. Gets the win against Pitt.
Oh, so Pitt goes to 2-1. Back home, they have a bye week after that. Back home, September 27 against Louisville.
Louisville has always been a tough team for the Panthers. I think that trend continues, and Louisville wins on the North Shore.
Ooh, 2-2. Home again the next week, October 4th, against Boston College.
The Panthers will rebound and beat Boston College.
At Florida State on October 11th.
Florida State has become a disappointment in college football, but I think the Panthers are going to take advantage of that and get the win in Tallahassee.
At Syracuse, October 18th.
I think Syracuse ends up victorious in that one.
I'm trying to think, man, I'm going to Florida that next week. Sarah and I have a wedding that next Saturday. I probably have college football that weekend. But some of the producers should make a trip up to see our pal Dom DiTommaso.
That would be great.
Up there for that game. October 25th, back home against NC State.
This is a tough one, but I think the Panthers being at home will play a significant role, and the Panthers will beat the Wolfpack.
A classic ACC rivalry here Saturday, November 1st at Stanford.
The band is out on the field, and the Panthers are going to win at Stanford.
Notre Dame comes to Acrisure Stadium on September 15th, or November 15th.
Yeah, the Panthers are not winning one.
Nope. So you have Pitt at 6-4 right now. Georgia Tech on the road, November 22nd.
This might be a tough one. I think the Panthers end up with a win.
They end their regular season Saturday, November 29, at home against Miami.
The U gets the win.
So you have Pitt at 7-5, Joel. So another bowl eligible season.
That's right. Hopefully not Detroit.
Yeah, and it doesn't end with them losing six consecutive games, so that is good. All right, Joel, I'm ready to go. Hit me.
Penn State starts off with four home games. The first one is Nevada.
Yeah, they're going to win this game big.
Well, if they're going to win big against Nevada, what are they going to do against Florida International the next week?
Even bigger. And then even bigger after that, we can even skip ahead. Penn State's going to start 3-0. This has to be one of the – and I don't mean to take a shot at Penn State. That might be one of the easiest three-game opening season slates I've ever seen. So I'm going to guess that Penn State starts 3-0.
It almost makes you wish they had a tougher opponent among those first three games, and that third one being against Villanova, a basketball school. All right, Penn State 3-0 heading into the Big Ten slate of games. They take on Oregon in Happy Valley.
You might think, if you listen to me, oh, well, Donnie's just a Penn State hater, so he's going to have them lose any tough game. I think Penn State wins this game against Oregon. I think they start 4-0.
Well, can they go 5-0 with a win at UCLA, yes or no?
Yes, they can. They will win at UCLA 5-0.
The Nittany Lions come back home and take on Northwestern.
Maybe Ron Cook will be in the building. It won't matter. Penn State will win the game, 6-0 start.
This is where the gauntlet starts for Penn State. Next up, they are at Iowa.
This will be a tough game. I'm going to have Penn State winning the game and going to 7-0, but this is one of those games. It'll be like a 7:30 game on NBC, and Iowa will take Penn State down to the wire. I think it will be like a 3-point to 6-point game, but Penn State will get the win.
Penn State will be like a heavy favorite. It'll be like a trap game,
yes,
and Iowa somehow covers. Penn State gets a bye week before they head to Columbus, Ohio, and take on the Buckeyes.
They're going to need that bye week, but I don't think it'll be enough. This team has always been the kryptonite of James Franklin. No matter how good his Penn State teams are, I thought 2 years ago that Penn State would win. I thought this past season that Penn State would win. And here we are again, going to the defending national champion, Ohio State Buckeyes. I think the Buckeyes win again. So I think they spoil the perfect season for Penn State, but they will line themselves up very well to return to the college football playoff. Their first loss comes on that first day in November.
Penn State will come back home and take on Kurt Cignetti and the Indiana Hoosiers.
Indiana won't be as good as what they were this season. They were a bit of a Cinderella. I think Penn State will flex some muscle in that game, too, after a loss to Ohio State. I think they would beat Indiana by a couple of scores.
Two of Penn State's final three games are on the road, but should be against beatable opponents, first of which being Michigan State on the road.
Yeah, I think they take care of Michigan State in the middle of November. So another win for the Nittany Lions.
They'll come back home and play Wisconsin.
Is it Wisconsin?
Excuse me, Nebraska.
Yeah, okay, I was going to say, I'm looking at Nebraska here in front of me, unless I had the wrong thing. This will be another game where we'll have you will see Penn State fans, maybe yourself included, that they're like pissed off at halftime. Like, what's going on here? It's a close game for no reason. But then Penn State will end up winning the game by 10 plus points. Another win.
And then they will close their season at the Fighting Charlie Borgeses of Rutgers University.
Yeah, a shout out to James Gandolfini, aka Tony Soprano. But Penn State's going to win this football game. So I have Penn State at 11-1. I think it's an easy return to the college football playoff. Listen, Penn State should be one of the best teams in college football. I understand they are losing two of their best players. Definitely their best overall players on each side. But they got both running backs coming back. They got their quarterback coming back. They got to grab a pretty good receiver, I think, in the portal. But they will return as a team that should be on its way to another college football playoff. So 11-1 for Penn State at first glance in 2025.
It feels like they're getting back more than what they lost. Even though Abdul Carter and Tyler Warren are going to be tough losses, they're getting more back with Aller and the running backs.
Yeah, those guys are going to be top 10 picks. And maybe we even find out if they'll be even better than that. Maybe they're both going to sneak into the top five. I don't know. It's going to be tough for a tight end to do that, but Warren is a hell of a player. Fan Twitter, that's brought to you by South Hills Kia in Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. Coming up, we will ask Nick Faribault about both of those guys. He has been at the Senior Bowl all week. He will be ready for that game on Saturday. We have Faribault joining us in a few minutes on 93.7 The Fan. Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. Donnie Football with you for about another hour. The nightly sports call comes your way next. Simulcast on KDKA Plus. Joel Nelson is with me behind the glass. The Fan Hotline is presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. On that Fan Hotline, we find our guy Nick Faribault, Steelers reporter from PennLive.com. He is live at the Senior Bowl this week. All right, Nick, some of your favorite guys that you have gotten to watch over the last couple of days.
Yeah, Donnie, there's a few of them. I think the first one that sticks out to me is Toledo and defensive lineman Darius Alexander. He was awesome. Today especially, I think, capping his week off, you know, three straight really, really good days. Not just, you know, in terms of pass rush, but run defense too. He kind of did it all. It reminds me a lot of 2 years ago when I was here, and I saw Keanu Benton do very similar things. And the Steelers, you know, super interested in him, super interested in Benton. So it kind of lines up. He's one of them. Bashaul Tootin, I think, is really, really fun too. Virginia Tech running back. He's got breakaway speed. I didn't know he was that good in pass pro until backed on backers today. He was really sticking up some of these linebackers that he was facing. I think he's impressive. I also think Kansas running back Devin Neal, really good all-around guy. Really good fit for the Steelers, you know, zone scheme-wise. I think they're really good players. TCU wide receiver Jack Besh is another one of them. He is a really, really, really dependable player. From blocking to effort to great hands, he's fluid in and out of his routes. I really like him a lot. You know, the defensive line, there's just so many good players. You know, Walker Nolan, from Ole Miss, really nice player. He's super explosive. He's got great pass rush upside to his game. And then I'll go corner with this one. Quincy Riley out of Louisville is a really fun player as well. I'm not sure he lost the man coverage rip all week. You know, those one-on-ones are very heavily slanted towards the wide receivers. I thought he did a great job there, boosted his stock. And then there's Azaria Thomas out of Florida State. Typical press man corner, very Steelers-y in that regard. He was really good all week, too.
How many of these guys do you think could be or will be easily connected to the Steelers as we get closer and closer to late April?
Yeah, you know, guys like Nolan, Tootin, Neal, and Besh all really make a lot of sense for the Steelers. Alexander will, too. I think, you know, he's the type of mid-round guy they'll like because he wins from anywhere from the nose tackle all the way out to the five tech. He's really versatile, so, you know, they can do a lot with him. Benton was the same way where he could play inside or outside. But I think Alexander's a little thicker, so he'll probably play more inside. So he probably will slot into that nose spot a little easier than I think Benton has over his first 2 years. So I think he's one. I think Nolan, you know, he's going to be a first-round pick. So at 21, you know, he's definitely an option. He fits kind of what they like there in those explosive three techniques. And then I really look, you know, at Besh as a wide receiver that fits the Arthur Smith scheme and those two running backs just because they're such good zone fits for the Steelers. But I think the Steelers, you know, are going to want some speed. So I think Toot makes a lot of sense. He's probably going to run in the 4.3s. He's going to fly. The one guy I didn't mention that probably will be connected to them is Ty Felton, Maryland wide receiver. Had a good week, but he obviously is from Maryland, so he played with Dino Tomlin. You have that connection. But he's a good player. He's got great ball tracking. He's good in routes. He's going to run probably in the 4.3s. I think he came in here for probably a third-round pick. He might be a second-round pick now. He had a really good week. So Ty Felton will probably be another guy that actually gets connected to the Steelers just because of the Dino Tomlin connection, but he's actually a good player and fits what they like.
You said that the defensive line was a top focus for the Steelers again today. If you had to guess right now, do you think they are leaning that position in the first round, or are they not really showing the hand too much?
It's either defensive line or wide receiver, Donnie. It's one of the two. Defensive line right now does seem to be the top focus. You see what they look at the Senior Bowl, and it is a clear pattern. I mean, 21, they focus on running back. 22, they focus on quarterback. 23, tackle, and 24, offensive line at large. And so they really kind of just telegraph what they want down here. And they did focus a lot on the receivers, too. Mike Tomlin was over there a little bit yesterday, and Andy Waddle was over there heavily today, too. So wide receiver or defensive line, but there's so many defensive linemen in that 21 range, you know, Kenneth Grant, Tyleek Williams, we talked about Nolan, Derek Harmon. Those are all guys that are probably going to be going around that spot. Probably not all of them will be there at 21, but there will probably be two of them at least there. And then receivers, the other one. There's just no first-round receiver here in Mobile, but they showed interest in both of those. I would lean right now, if I were giving you a position that they would take, I would lean defensive line, yes.
Which position do you feel better about in terms of depth if they go one way in the first round? Well, that's okay because they can find a really good player in round two.
It's a ridiculously deep defensive line class, so it's not even close. It's defensive line. Donnie, it's pretty shallow at wide receiver, honestly. You know, you have McMillan, Burden, Ibuka, and Golden as your first-round talents, and then after that, there are some guys. You know, there are some guys like I talked about, but it's not like past drafts where there was just guys galore and you could get a legit good receiver in the fourth round. I don't think you're going to find many of those guys in this class. Defensive line, though, you can find different body types. You can find noses. You can find three techs. You can find five techs. You can find hybrids all the way up and down the draft board. It is probably the deepest defensive line class I've seen in a long, long time. And so this defensive line group is really deep. And so if you don't get, you know, a guy in the first round, you can get a guy like Darius Alexander in the third. And so that's just a unique thing because usually, you know, Darius Alexander would be a top 50 pick. I imagine when you start seeing, you know, some of these draft experts drop their top 50s, you know, here could be as much as 15 defensive tackles in that group. It is that deep of a group. And there's not going to be 15 defensive tackles that go in the top 50. So they're naturally going to get pushed down a little bit. So defensive line is absolutely the position that the Steelers are going to be able to wait on if they want to, or they can double dip on it.
Do you think they would double dip on it?
I do. I think it's a real, real easy position to double dip in this class. You're going to find guys in the fifth round that are going to be legitimately good rotational pieces. And I don't know what style they're going to want in a first-round defensive lineman. I don't feel like drafting a nose tackle in the first round is particularly good use of resources. And so, you know, if they're going to draft a guy in the first round, you feel like it's going to be a guy that's a Cam Hayward-like placement. And so they can easily follow that back up in the fifth round with a nose tackle, a run plugger. And so that, to me, is absolutely very possible. They need youth on this defensive line. You know, Cam Hayward's not getting any younger. Larry Ogunjobi's probably not back. Keanu Benton, I like Keanu Benton, but he's just one man. And Isaiah Loudermilk's a free agent. Don't think Dean Lowry's going to be back. So they need youth in depth anyways. So, yes, I do think double-dipping at defensive line makes a ton of sense for them.
So just based on logic with how deep that defensive line group is, I feel like if they have a shot at a top-tier receiver in that first round, take one then and then worry about defensive line after that.
I think it could be that. I also think they maybe they want one of those blue shippers because, you know, I talked about that group of four, Grant, Nolan, Harmon, and Williams. Those four guys probably in most classes are going earlier. In this class, they're not. I think that's kind of rare. And so you might have the ability. It's very similar to tackle last year, Donnie, where think about all the tackles that were in that class. Could have waited and gotten Roger Rosengarten. They could have waited a little bit and gotten Blake Fisher. Both these guys have good rookie seasons, and it was down the draft board at tackle. But they might want a blue chipper, and I think that might be their thought there. And wide receiver, you know, is a position we're going to have to see what happens. You know, what happens with George Pickens? Who do they sign, trade for, whatever? I think that's going to be a big part of that kind of equation. And I think they're obviously going to need to add somebody or somebodies to free themselves up to take that defensive lineman. But as we stand here right now, I think what your logic is very sound because you're going to want one of those top four guys. And the Steelers should have one of those guys there. You know, I don't really foresee a scenario where one of McMillan, Burden, Egbuka, or Golden are not there. They're four very different players. I don't think McMillan actually has a chance of getting to the Steelers, but the other three do. All three of those guys are very different players. And so it's going to be kind of what the Steelers want, but they need kind of that top-end receiver talent. So I very much agree with you right now as it stands here. Receiver is the way to go if you're taking it from that depth perspective.
Steelers reporter Nick Faribault with us here on 93.7 The Fan. Check out his stuff at penlive.com. He is live at the Senior Bowl. I would agree. It seems like McMillan will be that like top 10, top 15 caliber receiver that won't reach the Steelers. But out of the other three that you think would go in the first round, which one would be your choice? If all three were on the board at 21, who are you going to go with?
You know, I think I would personally like to see them go with Mecca Egbuka. I love his game. He's just a really safe prospect. And that doesn't mean doesn't have a ceiling. I just think there's very little bust potential in his game. He is so polished in his game. He's a great route runner. He blocks, great hands. He only played in the slot, but that's because they had Carnell Tate, Marvin Harrison Jr., and Jeremiah Smith, and guys that played outside. He can play outside. I think, you know, there's a lot of Jackson Smith and Jigba in his game. He's just a really solid player. Does a little bit of everything well. I'm not going to kind of go against anybody that wanted them to hit Matthew Gould. I think he's a really fun player. For his size, he runs routes extremely well. I think he's a stud. But I just think Egbuka, in the Smith scheme specifically, is such a force multiplier, both in the run game and the pass game, that he brings some things that Steelers just do not have to the room. And so I really like Emeka Egbuka. I'm pretty high on him. And so that's the guy I would go after. But, man, I mean, between those three, I'm not sure you can go wrong. Burden's a slot type. Maybe that's where maybe you don't want to draft the slot because you have Calvin Austin and Ron Wilson there. But I just kind of think, personally, when I'm thinking of the receiver position right now, to be quite honest with you, I just think they need talent there. So I think Burden's a really good player. And so if you can get a really good player, even if it's a slot, I mean, I think you do it. But I would have him lower probably than the other two just because of that. But I would go Egbuka, but all three of them have their strengths and weaknesses. It would be really good picks at 21.
I feel like I've seen some people have worries that Egbuka will only translate better as a slot in the NFL. Do you have those concerns when you watch him?
I don't. You know, I remember these concerns kind of coming up in 2020 around a guy named Justin Jefferson. And Justin Jefferson was the slot only because, LSU had Ja'Marr Chase and Terrace Marshall. And when he went outside, you could see that he had traits there. A.J. Brown was very similar, too. He was only a slot player at Ole Miss. He was a guy that was surrounded by talent. I think we have seen these smooth route runner types that can get in and out of breaks. Egbuka's not a scrawny player. He's got size. He can play with physicality. So it's not like he's just completely inept to beating press. I certainly think he can be, if you're so scared about him going against press, he can certainly play Z receiver. He's got enough speed to eat up cushion and win down the field. He's just a really good separator. And so, yeah, I think he can play outside. I think there's concerns about him playing in the slot just because you haven't really seen him play outside a lot. And so that's always a question. But I think he can do it. I think the traits are there. And so I think he's a really, really safe player for the Steelers, especially because for the Steelers, especially with Arthur Smith's offense, they do all of those condensed splits and stuff. And a lot of times, the outside receiver becomes a slot receiver when you're playing right off the tackle tip anyways. And so it's a scheme that just fits what he does really well. And so even if you have concerns about him playing in a slot-specific role, I still think you can see the vision in their offense.
Yeah, I've decided already that Egbuka is going to be the player that I connect myself to. Pony, obviously, very noticeably had Kenny Pickett a few years ago. Chris was all in on Broderick Jones a couple of years ago. I think Egbuka is going to be my pick this time around, and hopefully if that does come to fruition, it works out a little bit better than those other ones have.
Yeah, that's not a good streak going there, Donnie.
I'll say this: last year, I was all about either Jackson Powers Johnson or Zach Frazier. I said just get one of those two guys at some point, and I would be happy. Both of them ended up being very good rookies. I know that JPJ did not play center, but he was a pretty good guard for the Raiders, and Frazier was the real deal. So I feel pretty good about looking back to last year and what I wanted.
I don't blame you for that. Frazier was incredible as a rookie, and I think Egbuka can kind of come in and be like a really high floor player right away too. So I think he'd have a good rookie season like right off the rip. I think that's unique about Egbuka, even compared to the other two. He's just so polished. He doesn't have a lot of leap in his game to take. He's kind of, going to be there. I think you're going to be able to get day one impact.
Do you think they could double dip at receiver?
Yeah, I don't see why not. They need like four receivers. So I definitely think that seeing a wide receiver, if they like a guy in the fourth or the fifth round, I wouldn't disclose it. First of all, Calvin Austin's a free agent. And you really don't know what you have in Roman Wilson. So even if you get an outside guy, you could go at a slot, or you can get another outside guy, right? Pickens, even if he's here, he's in the last year of his contract. Who do they kind of get? They're going to need depth. Do they bring back Ben Skowronek? I don't know. Do they sign somebody back on vet men to bring him in? I we'll see, but definitely, I think it's a definite double dip position. We've seen the Steelers under Omar Khan like this double dip stuff. They really have like the kind of hoard positions and just relentlessly attack it. Corner his first year where they've got Porter and Trice. Offensive line, obviously, last year they relentlessly attacked that. Mm-hmm. And I could definitely see them doing that at receiver or D-line. I'll tell you this, Donnie, I'm not even going to like rule out them double-dipping at both D-line and receiver. I think they have like 3 seventh-round picks. I don't think it's crazy at all to see them double-dipping.
Do you think they'll take a flyer on a quarterback in any of those late rounds?
I do. I think at some point they will. I mean, it makes sense to do that. And I don't know, I don't think they're going to draft one before the third round. So to Jalen Milroe and Jackson Dart fans, I wouldn't get your hopes up for that one because it seems like they're going to go before the second round. We'll see. They could fall. But You know, I think it kind of starts at Will Howard and then it goes later. You know, you can go Will Howard, you can go Kyle McCord, Tyler Shuck, Dylan Gabriel. There's a few names in there. Not very inspiring names, but they're names. But I do expect them to take kind of a shot in the dark at somebody at this point in the class just to have a kind of a bite of the apple just to see, right? Because you never know. Every now and then there's a mid-round quarterback that comes out and surprises people. I don't really think it's going to be in this group, but I think they will take a shot in the dark at one.
Do you think that plan changes at all if neither Russell Wilson or Justin Fields comes back?
I'm sure it does, because I don't even know. I don't necessarily know what their backup plan would be to, you know, a Russell Wilson, Justin Fields-less QB room. I'm sure they would bring in a receiver, a free agent at some point, whether that would be Kirk Cousins or Sam Darnold or whatever, someone like that. I'm sure they would bring somebody in. But if it is a one-year rental, I think it would. And I think that is kind of where you would see them take a Will Howard or someone like that. And so we'll see. If you think, you know, neither Justin Fields or Russell Wilson are going to come back at some point, you got to fix that in free agency first. You got to have your starter in place because there's just no one ready to step in this year. You know, Cam Washington, Sanders are the two guys, but even if the Steelers selected Jalen Milroe, I don't think you'd want him playing this year. I don't think you'd want Jackson Dart playing this year. Like, all those guys need a year. Howard is like the one guy that kind of feels, you know, if you drafted Will Howard, I feel like, and he threw him out there as a rookie and he got time to kind of sit there and develop a little bit. I think he would be somebody that, you know, wouldn't completely smack down on his face. So I think that would be kind of a scenario where you could see someone like Will Howard selected.
I don't know if folks will want Milroe. He has like record small hands. I saw at the measurements the other day, Nick.
Well, it's funny here because the Steelers have drafted Kenny Pickett, obviously. And then Skylar Thompson also has the smallest hands tied with Kenny Pickett in the NFL. Currently the only quarterback on the Steelers roster. So I guess the Steelers have been cornering the market in small-handed quarterbacks. So maybe it's a sign.
Running back, third round or later?
I do think so. I don't necessarily get the feel they're going to go, you know, first round or second round with one. I mean, they could. If, you know, there's a scenario where like Caleb Johnson falls to them at 52, or if they really fall in love with somebody like Travion Henderson, I think they could. It's going to depend though on free agency. You know, they got to fill receiver corner. They got to have two of the needs at least knocked out. I think to go running back that early is a luxury. And there's so many running backs. You know, Donnie, we talk about defensive line being deep. This running back group has like 30 draftable guys in it. It is a deep group. And, you know, I was talking about Bashaul Tootin and Devin Neal. I mean, those guys are third, fourth round picks. So, yeah, I think that is kind of the perfect range for them. And they can find speed. They can find power. They can find elusiveness. You know, you're talking in the third round. You know, you're talking Cam Scataboo. You're talking Ollie Gordon. You're talking Tootin. You're talking Devin Neal. There are so many players, Trevor Etienne. There are just so many players in that group, high-name players, and they're good players. And so they will be able to find a rotational back in that fourth round, third round area, and they can even find